everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into Advertising Week's Great Minds, People and Culture podcast. I'm your host, Brenna Kinsey, Executive Vice President of Advertising Week and Emerald. On this episode, we're talking to Kumi Kroom, Duncan Chana's first managing director. Kumi leads the company's equity, diversity, and inclusion efforts. Kumi has served as a champion for equity and representation, reimagining the agency's recruitment, retention, and EDI consciousness by creating its EDI group, which she has led since 2019. The group includes staffers who are passionate about driving change in the agency's BIPOC, talent recruitment, and retention efforts, as well as its culture and ways of reflecting diverse perspectives. Kumi operationalized a culturally sensitive approach to ensure representative in the agency's creative work and has built a Black and African-American culture practice. In addition, she has led the rollout of EDI training programs for the agency. Hi, Kumi. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Ran. I appreciate it.
We're going to talk a little bit about D&I and how it relates to the industry and how you have viewed D&I in your professional growth. But before we start, I wanted to ask you, what does D&I mean to you as it relates to your own personal life?
Personally and kind of professionally as well, it really means, you know, recognizing, making space, creating balance for everyone. And, you know, from a broad sense, and more specifically, you know, when I think about a question like that, it really means equality and inclusion, you know, for our whole infrastructure of life, our job opportunities, our housing, you know, balanced and equal school systems and politics, which I know is, you know, really at the forefront of a lot of what everyone's thinking about, especially this year. So to me, it really is a push to really never need to call out DEI. And I like to really refer to it as EDI, because I feel like this notion of equity is at the center of all of this. And you know, this country and this world really is a melding of a lot of different peoples and backgrounds and a combination of cultures and backgrounds within one body of a person. And, you know, when these folks have been in, you know, society and helping build society, you know, really throughout all of history, you know, it really is the, you know, moment when what I consider a colonist agenda and movements that happened that really changed all of that. So, you know, and it would be great for us as a society to really think about it as it, you know, in my opinion, really was originally existing for all of us, which was all of us living in our own existence together. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. And you mentioned a few things around, obviously, politics and election year, things that we have limited control over as it relates to our policy, with the exception of being able to go in and vote. As it relates to your career, what were some of the challenges you faced, and how has that shaped your leadership style now? When did EDI become so important to you to focus on as part of your leadership?
Yeah, in my career, I had, you know, a number of times when I was really the token hire, or, you know, the face and voice for people of color, either for specific client segments or market audience or segments, or sometimes both. And, you know, over the years, there have been, you know, more need for a focus on cultural nuances among, you know, audiences that are trying to be reached for, you know, marketing and advertising reasons. And I believe that having a multicultural approach to work as it pertains to marketing and advertising really is how we always need to think about marketing and advertising. We are best when we're able to represent everyone that could potentially touch a brand, you know, And when we take that approach, I feel like, you know, if a brand is selling something, you're likely going to see an increase in sales. And when it's healthcare and other categories that aren't necessarily selling anything, it's important to have that equity so that everyone is able to see themselves and understand themselves in the communication that we're putting out into the world. And that really has molded how I've thought and how I've grown as a leader throughout the years in my style. I really will push my team to work with, you know, being knowledgeable about all types of people that we need to reach. And certainly has been the reason why I'm an advocate for more representation and perspectives within the work environment as well, so that marketing companies can really be responsible for work that really takes in those perspectives and creates authentic work. It's, you know, it's something that I feel like is really critical to what we do in the world of communications. And, you know, also in the past, you know, I've, you know, with many people of color have witnessed and been a part of stereotyping and microaggressions and gaslighting. And that was really kind of the norm in, especially in ad agencies in the past. And as a leader now, it really is my goal to make sure that at least where I work, those types of behaviors in the workplace become more history than the norm.
Thank you. And you mentioned multicultural marketing. And I remember I read data by Nielsen a few years ago that said that multicultural consumers had a spending power of over $3 trillion, which I'm sure has increased even then. So I think it's important for people to realize that if they're not marketing to the multicultural consumer, they're missing out on huge dollar amounts.
I agree. Absolutely. That really, to me, is what it's all rooted in.
And in your role with working with clients, how do you think about diversity implementation into campaigns, whether that's with vendors or actors that you work with?
So for my team in particular, I feel really advantaged in that our strategy always incorporates really deep dives into audience segments of people that we need to reach, because so many of our clients are speaking to Californians, and we have become really disciplined in staying steeped in building our knowledge in the very diverse group of people that live in this state. So we really think thoroughly through our work from a truly multicultural aspect. And we go deep into cultural nuances, countries of origin, acculturation, languages spoken at home, what is preferred in, you know, media platforms, to really help us to understand who we're talking to and how we can find them. And then we really manifest all of those truly multicultural insights into the creative approaches that we take and even the media plans that we build out in, you know, truly representing authentically all types of people. And this discipline really has been adopted across all of our accounts over the years, so that all of our clients really benefit from this deep bench of knowledge that we have about not only cultures, but, you know, we really lean into LGBTQIA+. We think a lot about accessibility and how that can show up in our work. And it engages our team. It excites them to really be able to think about the people that we're trying to reach and truly representing them. And, you know, we extend that also to the vendors that we're working with from a media perspective and thinking about the specific media outlets that we are utilizing and which ones are really going to be the best to reach all of our different audiences. So the list of media vendors are also and always very long, and production partners, we're really committed to finding more partners that have equal opportunity So we really extended the list of production partners that we have, and we're utilizing tools like Free the Bid, Bid Black, Streetlights, I think is another production avenue that we utilize a lot. And so it really allows our work to be truly multicultural from the moment of strategic inception, creative media, all the way through to what we produce and what's in front of as well as behind the cameras.
You mentioned California as a state. I know you've done a lot of work with the state of California before and more recently as it relates to the COVID education campaign. Can you tell us a little bit more about both of those works and what diversity meant when approaching those two different efforts?
Sure. I will say that the work that we do with the state now, as well as specifically with the COVID vaccine work that we did, was really critical in leaning into the understanding of culture and where people are, specifically for COVID. That work, you know, in the midst of where we all were in, you know, a moment of unprecedented everything, something that most of us had never experienced before, we really had to think about what people's mindsets were and their experiences and their fears of, you know, becoming, you know, potentially test subjects for the government and, you know, a lot of the misinformation that was swirling out there based off of past, like, you know, Tuskegee and the experiments that happened on a lot of the Black community, that there was so much fear. And we really had to lean in and study all of those beliefs and attitudes and really think about a truly empathetic way to talk to people exactly where they were and really not push them into, you know, thinking you have to get the vaccine no matter what, but really exposing them to true information and the efficacy of the vaccines and hopefully, you know, encouraging people to learn the truth about what was available to them and why and how that protection for our communities, you know, would allow the COVID virus to really not take over our whole lives the way that it did back in 2020. So it was life-changing work for us as an agency. I don't, you know, and all the work that we've done in reaching, you know, different types of communities, it never hit as true and as hard as it did with COVID, because not only were we steeped in it, in learning it and understanding it for ourselves and scared ourselves, we were actively, you know, in the midst of trying to help people where they were in the moment as well.
Thank you for sharing that experience. And previous to that, you worked on the tobacco control program with your team and your company. Were there a lot of parallels in how you approached diversity between the two programs?
For sure, there absolutely was. The work that we do with the tobacco prevention team at the state really has allowed us to understand how a marketing giant like the tobacco industry actually is quite stealthy and strong at actually targeting these multicultural and, you know, beyond multicultural audiences with their products. They have spent billions on science in understanding how their products can be addictive to Black communities, to Latino, Hispanic communities. They've specifically targeted LGBTQIA+ communities, as well as Indigenous communities, and in understanding those methods and how they were approaching targeting them and getting them addicted to nicotine and to smoking is part of the background of where we constantly are staying really deep in research and understanding of people. We're talking to people. We do regular focus group research activities to really keep us at the forefront of where people are at and, you know, staying dug into the tactics that the industry uses in trying to reach these people, because we need to reach them with all of the health equity messaging that they need to receive and understand as well. So it really set us up for great success in understanding how to reach people for the state when it came to the COVID vaccines, and really leaning in and knowing how to find those people and understanding really what was at the, you know, the cornerstone of their concerns, and being able to meet those things head on. So we didn't have such a huge start with that. We really had a great base of knowledge based off of all of the work that we do with tobacco prevention.
And that's fascinating. I remember reading a long time ago that there was actually a tobacco campaign where children of lower income communities were given free packs of cigarettes.
That's right. Yes, it is one of the early on tactics that the industry had to addict kids is really the starting ground for them. It still is today, even with all of the vaping epidemic that's gone on. They have utilized targeting kids first, because if they can addict you when you're young, they can keep you as a customer for a lifetime if they had it their way. And so it is a very old tactic that they've used and continue to use even today.
Wow. Both fascinating and devastating at the same time. I want to pivot a little bit into D&I internally as it relates to the advertising industry and some of the strides that we've made in the past couple of years as far as having more representation while still falling quite short. Where do you think we are as an industry on D&I initiatives internally as it relates to leadership representation, hiring, and being able to retain people to grow their careers within the industry?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that you know, there's certainly a surge that happened, but it seems to be unfortunately slowing down a little bit again, or at least that's what it seems. There's a lot of leadership roles that still are not really truly representative, you know, of the country that we live in. I think that, you know, some of the challenges that really exist is that, you know, EDI work is work that has to stay consistent. You know, it's just like anything else, you know, within your company, you know, you have to stay studied up on, you know, the things that you want to be the best at. And so, you know, with hiring, you have to keep your pipelines, you know, filled with different resources, and you have to refresh that and re-examine that. Companies need to continuously, you know, be looking at how they are approaching their staff and making sure that people can truly show up as their authentic selves and bringing the best of themselves, and that they are creating a space and environment for people to do that, so that people can be retained and they want to stay at a company and hopefully, you know, rise up in their careers to those leadership roles. So, you know, I think it's continuously, you know, keeping your foot on the gas and staying diligent about this as well as you would anything else with the sale of your, you know, sales of your company, if that's, you know, what, you know, generates your profitability, or whatever does generate your profitability, that you're focusing on that and you're paying attention to that. Well, you have to pay attention to the people that are behind the profitability and, you know, the richness of your staff and how you're able to support and grow them. I think that that's really critical in our industry right now. And while I do see some changes in, you know, in communication efforts and things that you see in front of your face and in terms of ads and things like that, there's still a lot of work to do, I think, you know, internally in companies and how we really have to keep carrying forward and making it more of the norm that these efforts are just what you do to really stay competitive in really any industry.
And are people leaving our industry because of the lack of representation or feeling a sense of belonging, in your opinion?
That is a really good question. I think there is still some of that happening. I think that the industry, you know, really over the past, you know, I would say year or so, probably are making people feel like they've been failed. There's been quite a lot of layoffs in the advertising and marketing industries. And so there with some of those layoffs were a lot of the, you know, the diversity, you know, chiefs and, you know, the infrastructures that were put in place back in 2020 to really do better. And then all of those, not all of them, but many of those roles were let go. And so I think along with that, some people left feeling like all that progress that had been made was just forgotten and feeling like, well, we're back to, you know, back to the drawing board a little bit for some folks. I think for sure that has definitely made people drop off and make shifts and leave companies for sure.
That's interesting. So despite the half a decade of efforts into the EDI space, you are seeing more companies cut costs as it relates to the chief D&I officers or those programs in order to meet the bottom line demands.
Yes, for sure.
And what do you hope changes in the next 3 years as far as our priorities are around EDI?
I really hope that companies find that DEI is not an isolated, special, you know, in quotes, priority that that can, you know, be pushed to the side or pushed out completely when, you know, layoffs and whatnot need to happen. That it really needs to be at the center of how we think about people. It would be great to see that if, you know, if these diversity officer roles diminish, it's because entire companies and agencies are committing together in making sure that equity and inclusion is a part of normal business practices and that representation in those companies match the world that we live in. That would be a great turn of events that I would love to see that, you know, while I really am for all of these positions being in place, that companies need them to really take the charge and show all of these C-suites and beyond, you know, the importance of this. I mean, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a hope that's perhaps a little more lavish, but I can't help but to hope and wish that really it becomes a norm that all companies are embracing this and that it's normal. It's not something extra or something special. It is just what we have to do in running business as usual.
And what advice do you have for other leaders like you who believe that EDI is not just a priority that needs to be carved out, but something that needs to get embedded into the overall health of the business?
I think that, you know, leaders should think about EDI the same as other growth opportunities and, you know, training. Many companies, you know, commit resource money and time for, you know, skill development training, and there's team building and company perks, and leaders should really be clear on how well their teams are doing. How strong are they? Are all people working together, and are they the truly, you know, high functioning team that every, you know, company, you know, desires to have in their infrastructure of people? It could really be a sign that they need to look closer at their people and how they're able to show up every day and really understanding what those needs are of the people. I would really even dare to say that many that would really have the opportunity in a work environment to truly show up, you know, honestly as themselves without needing to code switch or diminish their voices and being truly, you know, equal to one another, that some would see that as even better than any job perk that a company could provide.
I love that point of view, that being seen and being part of something bigger and having meaningful and job satisfaction in the work you do through being seen is so much more important to most people than the rest of the packages that we tend to over-index on. As we wrap up, what resources have you found the most useful around having conversations on EDI internally as well as externally, especially as it relates to equity and equality in an ever-changing political landscape like the one in our beautiful country?
I would say that, you know, having a coach or a moderator for, you know, these EDI discussions, having a facilitator to start off with, you know, unconscious bias training is a great place to start. Having that outside educator that's impartial to the rest of your company infrastructure as a guide is a great start to help teams have honest conversations and help bring some light to often uncomfortable conversations that are really necessary to have, you know, in the work environment. When you're in communications, you know, we're needing to be knowledgeable in talking about all things, but can we truly show up in a space and be able to talk to each other when there's different levels of knowledge from our backgrounds and journeys and our, you know, political beliefs and understandings? And we've also found that, you know, having regular assessments of your team is an important way to gauge, you know, what additional training you might need to make sure that direct and open conversations are able to happen. And when your team, you know, members, there's, you know, people are always going to have, you know, moments when there's new team members entering into the space, and those that unfortunately may have to move on to build their careers, you know, the training and conversations have to be ongoing, and you have to make sure that all of the new folks that are coming into the space are able to engage in those conversations, and that, you know, it really flourishes in how you're trying to grow and build your team. It's important that the company also really leads and reminds staff of their commitments and what they believe and stand for, especially in the world right now with so much turmoil and so much politics. I think there's so much in the headlines right now about, you know, what companies should be saying internally and externally. And if leaders can come to the table and remind their staff of, you know, what their commitment is to EDI and what they stand for, then that will reflect in what also happens in what we say outwardly to the public as a company as well. So I think that those two areas are really the best resources in making sure that those conversations can happen in a really healthy way. And knowing that there's always going to be not everyone agreeing, right? But that there's opportunity for all voices to be heard, and so much learning that happens when we're able to hear different points of view. It's really critical to the work that we do.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights and perspective with us, Kumi. And how can our listeners find you, whether to exchange ideas with you as a leader who's focused on equity and inclusion in the workplace, or to tap into your team's expertise on multicultural marketing?
I am, you know, currently the managing director at Duncan Channon in San Francisco. So you can certainly find my contact information through our Duncan Channon website there. As well, I'm on LinkedIn under Kumi Kroom, so you can find me there as well.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.